Hoi, 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 cheeky monkeys.
Toppy. It's Bergkamp. That's magnificent.
Gentle squad.
Well done. Bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to a Bergkamp Wonderland, an Arsenal podcast. I'm your host, John, and this week my guests are Fleet Street's finest, Simon Collins. Simon, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Yeah, very, very well, thanks. Thank you for coming on, for gracing us with your presence. You know, see you hobnobbing now with all the top journos.
Well, I was always told by my mum, just look like you know what you're doing and everyone will just think you know what you're doing. So
it's good advice. And from one man who knows what he's doing to another man who hasn't got a clue, it's the Welsh warrior, Jason Davies. Jason, how you doing, mate?
When are you going to get my name right? It's not Davies, it's Davis.
It's Davies. It says it. Look, it's out of spelt.
You fucking Neanderthal. And by the way, blue tick boy over there.
I haven't got a blue tick.
It won't be long, will it? It won't be long, fella. Look at you. Who followed you this week, Si?
I don't know who followed me this week.
Who followed you this week, Si?
I lose track.
Wasn't it a famous BBC journal?
Oh, no, he didn't follow me. He just liked one of my tweets, which was mildly arousing. So
I'm sure he follows you now.
He might do. Maybe just on the sly.
Oh, Arnie's boy, aren't you? Arnie's boy.
We're only saying it because we're jealous.
Yeah, very, very, very jealous. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. John, how are you, pal?
Yeah, very good. It's like a week we haven't spoken. It's very rare for us.
I didn't know what to do on the weekend. Thank God Shreds was there. Otherwise, I was lost. It was bizarre.
Don't worry, listeners. Danny is here also, but he's just silently in the background, twisting all the knobs and all the other things to try and make us sound better than we actually do.
He's left me to be the third wheel. I feel like I'm stuck at the airport just here, just waiting for something to happen.
Only one game to talk about this week, and it wasn't exactly a cracker, but there are a few talking points, that's for sure. It was Huddersfield 1, Arsenal 2. Jace, you did the radio show for this. Thankfully, I got the day off. What was the sort of general mood from our lovely listeners and sort of reaction to the result?
Look, we all saw the game. It wasn't the best. I think that the chat box is kind of, you know, was highlighting the fact we've got so many injuries, which is fair comment. And it's 3.1. It's a gritty display. You know, it will be nice technique with his goal. Yes, he gets the deflection, but he's done well there. Lacazette, you know, Maitland-Niles with a nice assist, and Lacazette, as usual, you know, dead-eyed. The only disappointment was letting in the goal, but you know that was kind of expected. But it was dire, to be fair. But as the chat box pointed out, you got an awful lot of injuries there. And it's 3 points away from home.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing at the moment. It is just getting those wins on the board and trying to secure top four if we can. Simon, obviously, I know you were working the weekend, but you managed to see the highlights. What did you make of the performance?
It wasn't great, to be honest. As Jace was saying, it was pretty turgid stuff and pretty hard viewing. It was bad enough watching the sort of 5-10 minutes on Match of the Day, let alone the full 90. So the guys who did that, fair enough. But defensively looked a little better from what I saw, but against a team like Huddersfield, who, you know, weren't offering that much going forward, probably not that surprising. But I mean, slightly weird. Well, I was looking at the stats afterwards that they had more possession than us, which is a bit worrying. But
they dominated the second half.
Yeah, I mean, that's just bizarre for us against a team like Huddersfield, we should really be controlling. But good for Iwobi to get on the score sheet. I know he's a lot of the debate afterwards, well, I'm sure we'll come on to it, was people saying about his place in the team and his role and what he offers. But I think he's someone who's probably got this sort of 4 months or so to prove to Emery that he's good enough and that we don't need to upgrade in that position, even though I think we do. And Lacazette scoring again was a bonus. Obviously, I was pissed off about that because I brought Aubameyang into the fantasy team and then find out he's ill and he's not playing. So But I mean, other than that, it's one of those games where you just win it and move on, but hardly the sort of brilliant performance you'd expect against a team who are bottom of the Premier League.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. I didn't see the game until after the result, after it finished. So that was a fun 90 minutes viewing, watching that back. Only took me 2 days to watch the whole game.
You silly sod.
I had to. Well, you're on the podcast. You've got to do it, mate. You've got to know what you're talking about a little bit. Unlike Danny, who thinks, oh, I think I watched that one. I can't remember. I might have been asleep. I don't know.
But my cat.
My cat did this amazing trick, though. The game itself, I actually thought, for the most part, we defended all right. I did agree. Like, the thing about the possession, I thought, was really weird. I mean, they just outnumbered us in midfield, and that's where they got a lot of joy. But I think I kind of got what Emery was doing, because he felt like we were secure enough in the air. Because you basically just forced Huddersfield wide the whole game and let them put crosses in. And I thought we dealt with them, like, perfectly fine. Like, Mustafi was fine in the air, Koscielny as well. He still had the issue, though, that Monreal, I felt, I don't know if you talked about this on the radio show or not, Jace, but Monreal kept getting pulled across quite far to the left, covering where Kolasinac basically wasn't dropping in. And it was almost like we were playing with two centre-backs rather than three at times.
You haven't listened to the show?
I haven't had a chance to, mate. I'm sorry.
I can't believe it. No, we didn't actually talk about that. I mean, the big surprise was going away to Huddersfield, playing three at the back. Mm. When you've got an injury crisis with your centre-backs, I know Mavropanos is on the bench, etc. But, you know, to be fair to the back three, the goal that eventually did catch us out, it was a great through ball from Aaron Moy. You know, there was nothing Coz could do about that. You know, okay, it's an own goal in the end, but, you know, that initial ball into the box had beaten us all ends up, but that ball would beat better defences than ours, if you know what I mean. So, you know, just one of those. But, you know, with Kolasinac, when you're playing that two in the middle, you know, that those wing backs are going to be asked to go up high.
Yeah,
and you know that either one of your flank centre backs are going to be pulled out. It's just the nature of the beast. The disappointing fact was that we turned the ball over so much, and it wasn't. You know, I mean, you could see the. I know we'll get onto it later probably, but you can see the nonsense on social media with people having to go to Wobi, people having to go to Maitland-Niles, but Guendouzi, Torreira, they gave the ball away cheaply. Not under any pressure at times as well. You know, although Huddersfield did pressurise us really, really well, you've got to give them credit. They worked really hard, but, you know, it kind of went through the team like a dose of salts giving the ball away. I mean, I don't know what you guys thought of that, but, you know, I would dread to see the stats on turning the ball over in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a couple of times, for the first sort of 10 minutes of the game, I was trying to keep track on players and sort of like if they're giving the ball away or nice pass, that kind of thing. As the game dragged on and sort of got progressively worse, it became more difficult to concentrate on it. But yeah, I mean, Iwobi did, Maitland-Niles, the midfield as well, as you said, Mustafi, Monreal, Mkhitaryan, Kolasinac. So, and I think it was like one player was worse than any other on the day. But yeah, the fluidity wasn't there. I still think we're missing Xhaka. I know people don't like him, but I do think he just brings a level of sort of calmness to our midfield and can put his foot on the ball and slow things down when we need to and just keep it a bit better. But yeah, the confusing thing was Diakabi was getting so much space down our left-hand side. Emery doesn't address it in any way during the game. And then neither Monreal or Koscielny, you know, says to either Guendouzi or Iwobi or Kolasinac, you know, just pulls them in for 5 minutes, just a bit closer to help Monreal out. Because he was getting roasted by Diakabi for a good 20 minutes in that match.
Yeah, I've got an Opta login, so I can actually look at all the stats and stuff. I'm just having a look to see what the passing accuracy like was of the players on the pitch. So you got Suarez 100% because he only made 6 passes. Then Koscielny 90%. Monreal 85.7, Guendouzi 82.9, El Nene 81.3, and the bottom you got Kolasinac, 55.6% passing accuracy.
Yeah.
Ainsley Maitland-Niles, 61.5%. Iwobi, 63.6%. But then, to be fair to Jace, Torreira is 64.3%.
Yeah.
So there's a percent difference between Iwobi and Torreira. And as we've talked about before on this, the level of criticism is not equal in terms of those two players. But
yeah, it's also, excuse me, it's also depends on where you're passing the ball on the pitch. Mm. If Iwobi makes an incomplete pass and it's on the edge of the opponent's box, or he's tried for a cross and it hasn't quite connected or something, I'm not really going to be upset about that. Mm. Whereas if Torreira or Guendouzi or whoever it is, you know, is making a pass on the edge of our box and it's given away really casually, it's a completely different...
It's thing. Also that creative players, isn't it? I mean, it's like players like Eriksen and other creative players in the league are some of the highest for giving the ball away, but that's because they're trying passes, which are to like the killer ball rather than passing it. Like Shelny's is 90% pass completion or whatever, but that's because he's knocking it to his other centre-back. So
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. The big thing was as well that the conditions weren't great, okay? I don't think it was horrendous, but I think there was a strong wind because that ground is down in a valley, isn't it? And you could see if anybody's playing a long ball, that ball got held up quite a lot of the time, and it didn't matter who passed it, you had players slipping an awful lot. So, you know, okay, whilst conditions weren't exactly 70s mud pit or anything like that, you know, they did run into trouble there with regards to the conditions on the pitch. So, you know, that was one of those things. But again, you know, you saw a couple of players targeted after the game as usual, and it's just getting very boring now. You know,
yeah. I like the back three, because that formation, I think the only person it suits is Kolasinac.
I'm not a fan of it. The thing with it is, if you're going to play that, I want three in midfield as well. But I do agree with you. It feels like it's there to get the most out of Kolasinac and what he offers going forwards.
I don't know. The problem is, you know, if you look at a centre back issues, it kind of doesn't make sense. You know, I'm still worried about Cause's fitness. I really am.
I thought he had a good game, to be fair. I thought he was probably our best defender on the day.
Look, to be honest, you couldn't knock any of the defenders, in all honesty, you know. But the big thing is, I just worry about his fitness, as in, you know, if you saw people slipping on that pitch, and, you know, with his tendonitis problems in the past, you don't want that re-aggravated. And yet, I just thought, you know, you go if you went 4-3-3, it would have been a bit more solid for us. But it's 3 points in the bag, isn't it? You know, ultimately, you know, Captain Hindsight here, you know, it doesn't really matter. We've won 3 points. Yeah, you know, it wasn't the easiest of days, but it was putrid football. It was shit.
Yeah, bit of a new manager bounce as well for Huddersfield. I don't think, even when I saw them under Wagner, I didn't think they were a bad team. They just really couldn't score goals. They all looked, you know, they looked pretty organised and all worked hard and stuff. But yeah, they were just struggling to put the ball in the back of the net. And to be fair, even in this game, they had a couple of chances that they had better finishes. Maybe they'd get a goal.
The Poitras chance, off, he was unlucky.
Mkhitaryan back in the team, Simon. I'm not his biggest fan, but it relieves a bit of that pressure on Iwobi, because he's basically been our only creative player, really, for the last, well, kind of since Ozil's been dropped, I guess.
Yeah, I was really, really excited when we got Mkhitaryan, whatever it was, well, 13 months ago now. And actually thought we'd got the better of that deal by getting rid of Sanchez and getting Mkhitaryan. I thought we'd won the negotiations and come out of it best. But it just, for me, is flatters to deceive quite a lot. I mean, he's good in games like this, and to be fair, if you speak to some United fans, they sort of say his biggest value for them was in the Europa League, and a bit of a flat track bully, really, where against weaker oppositions he was fantastic, but in the bigger games and against the tougher teams, his value wasn't as much as it was. So good to have him back, and I think for us in the Europa League he will be really crucial. But longer term, I mean, I probably prefer Iwobi in the system we play to him. I just don't think he offers that much, Mkhitaryan. And he's a sort of player who I think when he's on that bigger wage, you could probably get a reasonable fee for him this summer, and enough to get him off the wage bill and get some money in, because I'm sure there'd be clubs in Germany who would probably take him back. Or if he wanted to go all the way back to Eastern Europe, to Ukraine or Russia, I'm sure he could also get a move there. So, yeah, this is the sort of game that if we were playing, I would say, oh, let's play Mkhitaryan. He'll be great. And again, in the Europa League, for those Borisov games, he'll be perfect for that. But
yeah,
I just think in those bigger games, he's not really, to me, hasn't shown me that he's good enough.
Yeah. Jace, before we come on to, because I did want to talk about, you know, some of the unfortunate idiots on social media and Iwobi and Maitland-Niles in particular, just one of the subs in the game that, I don't know, struck me as a bit weird. When Torreira came off and you brought on Elneny, did that, I mean, when you were watching it, did it make any sense to you? Because
the only thing we could think of was that maybe he's carrying a bit of an illness or something. You know, they'd said before the game, you know, you had Ozil and Aubameyang out with illness. Apparently, illness had gone through the squad. You know, neither Guendouzi nor Torreira impressed on the day. You know, they're both young players. It's not having a pop at them. It's, you know, Huddersfield worked particularly hard. And maybe had something to do with that. That's all I can think of. But it was a bit of a strange one. The one thing I'd say in Mkhitaryan's defence is earlier in the season when we played 4-2-3-1, when we played the Liverpool game, even though I didn't think he played well, I thought he anchored us on that right-hand side. I thought we look better when he's in the team as opposed to his performances. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but
we looked more balanced.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. But with regard to the substitutions, the Torreira one was a bit perplexing. But, you know, if they've had a dose of illness through the team, then there's not much you can say, is there?
Yeah. No, I mean, I hope it's that and it wasn't a tactical one because it really didn't make any sense. Although it was funny seeing Elneny finally get on the pitch, then he robs a really good chance for Lacazette to score.
Oh, whoa. I don't agree with that at all, okay? He's the man coming onto the ball, so therefore he should have right to go for the ball. You know,
if you're going to do that, you've got to call it and get your striker out of the way.
Neither of them communicated, did they? Something we mentioned on the radio show where it's a total lack of communication between the both of them, but the player coming onto the ball is the one you want taking the shot.
I mean, Lacazette doesn't know that Elneny's coming in, steaming in behind him. So he's going to go for the ball, isn't he?
He didn't. It looked like kids playing leapfrog.
Yeah. It's the first time I think I've seen Emery shout at one of the players on the pitch. And I think it was a few minutes after that, Elneny gave the ball away, like some sort of poor pass or something. And he really had a go at him. And I've never seen him lose it like that before. It was quite funny. Maybe a little hint as to why he doesn't play him very often. The only other notable sub, obviously, Joe Willock came on. Again, like you said, I think it was just with so short on numbers. And Denis Suarez, who hardly touched the ball. So I still have no idea what he's like as a footballer.
Do you know what? He hardly touched the ball, but I don't know if you saw this. He was asking for the ball. When he did get on the ball, which the very few times he did, he'd move into space and he'd ask for the ball. He was hungry for it, which you don't see an awful lot from certain players in our squad, right? So that kind of impressed me. Si, did you see that?
Is that Suarez you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a quality that's often overlooked and undervalued in players, and we're probably going to talk about him later on. But that was one thing that Aaron Ramsey always did and always does do, is have the bottle to show for it, to not hide, you know, to take the ball. And I'm trying to think if it was, there was an ex-pundit who might have been talking about it at a time, but there's times in big games where as a player, it's very easy to hide and to make yourself look like you want the ball and to make a run that makes it look like you want it and have your arms up. But you know full well that you're not going to get the ball because either someone marked you or you're in an offside position. And just from that brief cameo from Suarez, that having that bottle and that desire to be like, look, give me the ball and I'm going to get control of this. We need more players like that, especially with someone like Ramsey going. And that's a quality that we will need going forward. So as you say, it was pleasing to see that. And I think going forward, certainly for the rest of this season, he's going to have quite a prominent role. And I would think he'll shift people like Mkhitaryan out of the team, and he'll get a fair crack at it, hopefully.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see him from the start in the Barté game. I'm guessing that's that's where he'll get his first start for the team. After the game, there was some, well, we always see idiots. I don't want to say idiots. Okay, some people are idiots. We always see people criticising players, which we do on here, obviously, which I think is fine. You criticise the players, you can criticise the managers. I don't have a problem with that. I certainly dig players out plenty. But there was a slight difference in that we saw people tagging Iwobi and Maitland-Niles, those two players in particular. And it wasn't like it was constructive criticism or saying, you know, I don't think you had your best game today, but, you know, keep going, or any kind of encouragement. I don't think players are above being criticised. But the level of abuse that some of these players, and those two in particular...
Do me a favour. Just take a look at any post involving Mustafi and read the replies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I'm sure there's plenty in there as well.
Let's get something straight. I saw a few people, if you did this to Maitland-Niles and if you did this to Iwobi, you're a disgrace. Well, you're happy to call Mustafi all the names under the sun. It's fucking pitiful. It's absolutely fucking pitiful. And, you know, AMN actually replied to people.
Yeah, that's what amazed me. Yeah. And I don't know if it was like a level of sarcasm in it. And he was like, oh, because a lot of his replies were, I'm sorry, bro, I'll try harder and stuff, which might have been a genuine thing. And obviously he will try harder. He didn't have a particularly good game against Huddersfield. Maybe there's a level of sarcasm in it and he's just laughing at it. And I hope he is. And, you know, and it doesn't put them sort of in a negative, you know, kind of mindset playing for Arsenal. Players get booed and stuff, and it's happened, and I just think it's more prevalent now than it has been since the time I've been watching football. Anyway, it seems to have just got worse and worse.
But social media's never been more popular, has it? And the side of it, okay, criticize the performance, fine, it's what we do, you know what I mean? Mm. You can criticize the guys for their performance, etc., but to abuse them or to, you know, comment on their on their character and stuff like that, That's where I draw the line. We talk a lot on here about mental health issues and stuff like that. Imagine if you get in 20,000 replies and everybody's calling you all sorts of names. It's pretty fucking shameful. And the people who are doing this, if you did that to them, they'd be the first ones to cry and bitch. Mm. You know,
I don't mean you can question any Arsenal players' desire, commitment, you know, willingness to win, do well for the shirt. I mean, you can criticize someone's performance and, you know, how they played that day. But I think, as you say, you know, attacking someone's character and some of the stuff we've seen is just, A, it's out of order. And B, I don't understand at all what any benefit of it is. If you're a fan, what benefit are you getting by criticizing and abusing your own players? It's baffling, I find it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting as well, because obviously, Simon, in your job, part of it is, you know, reviewing a game, and you might say, you know, so-and-so performed really poorly tonight and couldn't pick up his man, that kind of thing. But you do it in a...
Constructive,
in a balanced way. And don't get me wrong, I've been, obviously, on the radio show, I've more than one time gone over the top because it's sort of in the heat of the moment and you get amped up and...
Yeah, but it's the performance. You criticize the performance.
Mm.
You know, that's the one thing we do is criticize the performance, not the man, not the character, etc. None of us, you know, unless you're Neil Chimp, you don't know these people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've never met them. Well, Simon has, obviously, because he's world famous. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things, I've never met any of the players. You know, I don't know them personally. You know, they're professional footballers. They're doing a job. Why should they do it if they're getting pelters all the time? I remember Arseblog did a show, it's a couple of years ago now, and Aaron Ramsey put an Instagram post about Happy St. David's Day. You know, totally innocuous post, Happy St. David's Day. And he read out some of the replies, you know, kind of wishing cancer on his kids and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? From so-called Arsenal fans.
Yeah.
And the show's online. You can go and go back and listen to it. And it's absolutely mind-boggling. You know, we've all lost our rag at some point, and we've all posted a silly tweet. but to wish, you know, wish ill on somebody. And, you know, God, I looked at the Mustafi stuff after his 100 appearances, and it's fucking shameful.
There's a difference between, like, I'm not a Mustafi fan. I think the club should move him on and get a different centre back in.
Yeah.
And I will criticise his performances and everything else. But yeah, I'm not going to. I don't know. The thing that annoys me the most about it is the two they pick on out of all the team are two kids who've been at Arsenal, you know, since they were young boys, basically. Mm. You know, that's kind of the dream as a fan, is having one of your own who's grown up through the academy and everything else and come through in the, you know, like Tony Adams did, and like John Terry at Chelsea, you know, all these kind of things. That's what you grab onto as a fan.
And of all the players to, young as well.
Yeah, and of all the players to pick up, it just seemed bizarre. And I think there's an element of people expecting Arsenal to be better than we are at the moment, because, you know, sometimes as fans, we have to face the fact we are not a Champions League team. We're a Europa League team. That means we have a certain level of footballers. It doesn't mean that you don't want to achieve and be competing for a title, but we're way off ever competing for a title at the moment. We're, you know, a good half a squad probably away from doing that. So you're going to have that level of player there. The amount of injuries you've got a young kid in Maitland-Niles who hasn't actually got a position yet, to be honest. You know, is he a right back? I don't know. Is he a winger? Is he a centre mid? You know, that's what he says he wants to be. He's filling in for Hector Bellerin, who's obviously a much more accomplished player who knows the position. Playing in a team that's constantly changing formation. The players around him are constantly changing as well. How are you going to have any form and consistency?
But this is the thing. They know nothing about the player either, do they? You know, if you look at, especially AMN, you look at his style of play. He's so relaxed. The kid's got so much confidence, okay? And the thing on Sunday, sorry, was that, you know, yes, he gave the ball away a few times. Yeah, okay, it happened, you know. But so did everybody else. And other people get a pass on this. And that's the bit that really annoys me. You're not doing it to your favourite players because, God forbid, yeah, they do no wrong. You know what I mean? But, you know, this kid came on in an under-18s or under-20s, whatever it was, World Cup final. And he frustrates the hell, you know, him and Maitland-Niles frustrate the hell out of me. You know, Maitland-Niles, him and Sir Iwobi, sorry. Maitland-Niles, because he's so relaxed. The boy is horizontal.
Yeah.
He's horizontal. With Iwobi, you know it's about the end product. But he scored a goal. He had a good first half. You know, second half, the whole team fell apart. Mm. And yet, you know, he's the one who's been targeted. Now, you know, be fair about it.
It's Iwobi's best season. You know, his best season for goals and assists he's ever had. He's already having it.
And I honestly forget
he's 22 Iwobi as well. I think we forget that because he has played quite a lot. And, you know, I think we forget how young he is. And, you know, he's still, I mean, 3-4 years' time, I think he could be a really, really good player. Mm. And, we saw against the Man City game, you know, he makes mistakes, which is probably, you know, he shouldn't be doing playing in a team like Arsenal. But when you're 22 years old, these things are going to happen. It's a steep learning curve for him because he's probably in the Arsenal team when, you know, 10 years ago or maybe slightly before that, when we were, you know, an established side challenging Premier League titles, a player of his ability and age probably wouldn't get in the team. But where we're at right now, as John correctly says, you know, players like that get in.
I get fed up trying to defend him because, I mean, some of the things I've seen, I mean, I watched the game, I knew the result, and I saw all the stuff online afterwards before I sat down to watch it. So I'm watching the game. 10 minutes in, see Iwobi sets up a good chance for Lacazette. And I think it's the left-back for Huddersfield, whose name I can't remember. But he comes in with a great tackle and stops Lacazette getting the shot off. I was like, that's a really nice pass. He scores the goal, right? Gets a bit of luck with the deflection. But he's in the right position. He connects with it well, does the right thing, puts it into the ground. Yeah, he gets a bit of luck, but you've got to be there. You've got to get in that position to take the shot.
You earn your luck. Yeah. You earn your luck.
The second goal, he plays a lovely ball through to Mkhitaryan. All right, Mkhitaryan gets held up a little bit and then lays it off for Maitland-Niles, but he's still involved in the build-up for the goal. And then you saw a couple of times he played in Kolasinac with perfectly timed balls where if someone had gotten the end of it or Kolasinac's final ball was a bit better, maybe it's another goal. And he had the one-on-one chance, which, yes, he should have done better with, and he knows himself he should have scored that. I'm watching the game and I'm thinking, okay, he's given the ball away twice in Huddersfield's half near their box. What do you expect a wide player to do? And this is also a kid who's 22 who, for a lot of this season, has been our only creative player in the team, and everything has been on his shoulders. You know, because Ozil hasn't been playing. Ramsey, when he has played, he's been good, but he's been coming on as a sub a lot, hasn't been starting many games. Mkhitaryan's been out injured. There's been no one else.
But this is the thing, okay? There was the shot he dragged wide, okay? He should have done better, right? The shot he skies, should have done better. On the most disappointing chance of all was the one straight to the keeper. He still hits the target.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's this side of it of, yes, he's frustrating, and he frustrates the hell out of me because I think he can do better. But to have a pop with the guy, you know, whether your opinion is he's good enough for the team or not, that's fine. You know what I mean? I got no problem with that. Everybody's due their opinion. But to have, you know, to call him names and stuff like that, I just find it childlike.
I don't even understand the is he good enough for the team argument. It's like I said, you know, we are a Europa League team. No one else in the team can carry the ball. The amount of times he got the ball on the edge of our box and carried it to theirs, you know, going past three players, no one else in the team does that. You know, if Bellerin's in the team, he's maybe the only other player can do it, but that's more of a, you're playing the pass into him than he actually carrying it. He's one of the only players we can actually kick the ball out to and he wins it. You know, he doesn't even head the ball. He brings it down on his chest. He's got amazing strength. And I think this, I saw someone say, oh, he'd never get in the Man City team. Well, Kel surprise, really? You know, no one in our squad is getting in Man City starting 11. That's no shock there. I think the argument that he wouldn't be in a squad for like a Man City or anyone else, I think is actually a little bit wrong. I think he's a very good squad player. And I think a lot of the top sides of the Premier League would take him and say, yeah, this is a guy I can bring on who's going to work really hard, press from the front, and can keep the ball and carry it up the field for me. He's a really handy player. Could we have a better player in that position? Yes. I would have no problem with the club going out and signing one. But just the treatment him and Maitland-Niles in particular after that game got, it really annoyed me. And I'm so fed up of the he's not good enough for Arsenal, you know, sort of argument.
I've got a question.
Seen some of the dross that we've had to have at the club before. Wow.
Maybe Igor Stefanos had a 4-year contract, for fuck's sakes. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I question whether some of these people are, you know, true fans, because a lot of the people that I follow and see people tweeting are more condemning these people's actions rather than me actually reading it.
Yeah.
I do understand that. But then also, I know Jay's touched on it briefly about this idea of, you know, you've got to think the impact you're having on the players. And there was a really good interview, you can find it on, it was in the Mail, Daily Mail last Saturday with Ben Foster, you know, talking about these modern footballers. And he was saying, you know, you'd be surprised how many of these people are just not happy. They're not happy people, and they're hired behind this persona of, you know, oh, I drive a big car, you know, I'm all great, social media, all this sort of stuff. And in reality, you know, the pressure they're under in an age that it is now, which is very different to, you know, 20, 25 years ago. And you listen to players like Paul Merson speak and they say, gee, I mean, if we had social media when we were, you know, playing, I mean, they unwound by going out or whatever, you know, seeing mates, things like that. And these footballers can't really do that. And having this level of abuse thrown on top of it is not going to help, is it?
Yeah, but you look at it, okay? I go back to the Mustafi business. Whether you think he's good enough for the team or not, I don't really care. You know, that you look at those replies. That you just fucking look at them. It's sickening. It's absolutely sickening. If I went into somebody's workplace and said that to somebody, I'd be arrested. Okay, you go back to the Emmanuel Eboué business. Coming on as a substitute at the Emirates, yeah, he had a shocker. He had a horrendous game. The state on that guy coming off that pitch in tears, you know, and the whole crowd baying for his blood.
I think there's a, it's obviously not just Arsenal, but I do think there is a level of entitlement that fans of certain clubs have just come to sort of accept, you know. We should be challenging for titles. We should be in the Champions League. We should be having players of this level, certain set quality. You know, clubs and their position and how well they're doing and level of players just ebbs and flows all the time. You know, Arsenal were rubbish for years, for so long. I mean, we went, what, 20 odd, nearly 20 years without winning the trophy? It's happened. You know, it's part of supporting a club, and some, you know, it's not great. It's no fun. I mean, I was speaking to Ross, everyone knows our friend, the Southampton fan, and we brought up the Aaron Ramsey thing, which we'll touch on in a bit. But he was laughing at, he said, oh, Arsenal fans squabbling over how much is too much money to pay a player. How hilarious. You know, whilst he's got a Southampton team where, you know, he's amazed if someone gets 100 grand a week, which is still an obscene amount of money to be paid for anyone. But, you know, it's a different sense of entitlement depending on who you support. I just think there's a lot of our fans have grown up seeing us win things, and it's just gone downhill. I mean, it's not awful. We're still in Europe regularly, you know.
You should have seen post George Graham. Yeah. We were shit.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching that, and it was confusing because I remember my mates at school saying to me, like, why do you support Arsenal? They're rubbish. they're awful to watch. Getting my Panini sticker pick and going, oh, Rule Fox, who plays for Norwich. He's an exciting striker, you know?
I don't want to mention he who should not be named, but like it's a bit like with Wenger, wasn't it? Where in a way he was a victim of his own success, and in the same way the fans are a victim of, I mean, that team that had the Invincibles team is a once in a, never mind a generation, it's a once in like a century, once in 200 years, you get a team like that where you don't lose a single league game. And so a lot of these generation of fans, probably myself included, are spoilt by having growing up with this team that was unbelievable, where we bought players for next to nothing, unearthed loads of gems, played brilliant attacking football. And unfortunately, we're going through the shit now. But you've just got to support the team.
Mm.
And get behind them, no matter who's playing in the team. This at the end of the day, it comes down to this for me. Essentially, you support the club, you don't support the players. The players are obviously a part of the club, but at the end of the day, players will come and go, managers will come and go, but the club, Arsenal, will still be there. So you get behind them, and you get behind the whole team.
Yeah, no, I think that's like sums it up perfectly. Yeah, that was our little rant, listeners, about that. I'm sure there'll be a few people going, I fucking hate him. anyway, Jace, should we wind him up even more? Should we do a bit of Arsenal news? Arsenal Italian news?
You crack on, son. You start.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm sure everyone's seen now. And yes, I know we're going to talk about Aaron Ramsey again. And I know there's some people going, oh, they're just going to switch off now. It's all right. We'll be quick. You can tune in like 20 minutes, we'll be fine. Well, if Jason starts talking, it might be longer. But yeah, so it's all official, announced. He signed his contract. He's going to Juve, as everyone basically knew he was. Some conflicting reports on his wages. Some saying he's getting 400 grand a week. That's basically false. It's come out, and it's pretty much what everyone thought it was before, which is closer to the 250 mark. So he'll be getting... I did the maths on this. What was it, like 150, 160 a week after tax or something? Plus his signing on fee and stuff. So it got announced by Ornstein, and I'm not sure the club was quite ready for it, Jace, were they?
this is the thing, okay? You know, normally the club speaks to Ornstein.
Yeah.
So who has leaked that to them? Because is it the agent? You know, the only people who actually know is the person who's told Ornstein and Ornstein. You know, but, you know, I find it a bit strange. And I find the sum mentioned again, it harps back to during negotiations where the club, you know, the club are leaking out that, oh, yeah, he wants Ozil money. He wants Ozil money. You know, I think the club are playing this smarter than they're letting on, to be honest with you. I don't know, Simon, you're in the know. you know, what are your thoughts on it? Because to be honest with you, it's by the by, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's happened and done. And I mean, with the debate over how much he's being paid, I mean, the only people who know that were the people who've seen the contract. And as much as Ornstein and Marcotti are both, you know, very reputable journalists, good journalists, both of them would admit to you that they've not seen the contract, but they'll have been told from people they trust. And it sounds like a classic thing. It happens a lot with transfer fees, where the selling club will say it's higher and the buying club will say it's lower. And in this case, I mean, it doesn't take genius to work out, but Marcotti's obviously got very good sources in Italy, and Juve will say, we're paying him 250 grand a week. And Ornstein is probably getting briefed from the Arsenal side, who was saying, we're paying 400 grand a week. So at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what to us anymore what he's being paid, because he's not signed a contract. But as you say, I think there's been a lot of briefing from different sides. I think from the Arsenal side point, because obviously there was the big thing that came out where Ramsey himself said it in to the press in a mix zone after one of the games, that the contract offer had been withdrawn. That was then Arsenal, I think, probably through Ornstein, came back with saying, oh, well, there was never an offer. But I mean, what that essentially was, there was never a concrete offer in writing on the table, but there was a verbal discussion ongoing and a verbal put forward. But I think Arsenal basically thought that Ramsey wasn't going to sign a contract, so they withdraw the negotiations from it, and he wanted to leave. And he's now, obviously, he's got his move to Juventus. And I think we can talk all about how much he's being paid, could we have done anything more? But when you look at it from a purely football sense of view, he's, what, 28 now. He's got the opportunity to probably go to one of the best sides in Europe, the best team in Italy, to work with one of the best managers in Europe. Taking money out of it all, I think it's completely a good move for him, and you can see why he's made the move. So we can argue all about the money we want, but from a purely footballing sense, it makes, to me, makes sense why he's done it.
Yeah, I just, the weird thing was that obviously Ornstein did the tweet, and then Ramsey came out and put his little post up about it, and the club did their club statement thing. But it was like, it was kind of, I think Steve put it in quite, it was like a placeholder thing, almost as if, like, either the club must have known that something was going to come out, but they just didn't tell the social media department.
Yeah, I think people higher up at the club will have obviously known this was.
Yeah.
They know he's not signed a new contract, and you know, when everyone else, when all of us sort of saying, oh, he's going to Juventus, they obviously know that too, and I think that was purely. I mean, I don't know this, so I obviously could be quoted on it, but it felt like, obviously, Ornstein had reported it. It's the BBC reporting it. So Juventus and Ramsey are probably like, oh, look, we've got to put some sort of statement out here. Basically, everyone knows it. So let's put a statement out rather than just not doing anything. Arsenal obviously quickly put that out. And then we've seen today they've done that. It's a good, lovely clip that they've put on social media. I think it's on YouTube as well. Like a 3-minute long sort of detailing Ramsey's career at Arsenal and stuff. And I'm sure towards the end when he plays his final game, there'll be more sort of tributes and stuff. I don't think that was, some people interpreted that as a sort of, a terse sort of goodbye and things, which does happen. I mean, certainly working in football, low, if you go to more sort of football league clubs and in some degree Premier League clubs, but when you see sort of managers leave, because media teams deal a lot with the manager, they quite often do sit downs with them, like Arsenal do their own one with Emery and stuff. You can often tell by the length of the message that goes in there what they were sort of thought of the club. But yeah. I don't think that was, you can read that much into it. This, I think that was literally, oh, let's get something out there quick. We've got this set up, bam, put it out there. And then today they've done a bit more. So I really don't think that there's any sort of animosity. Certainly because as well, from knowing people working in the media team, Ramsey's one of the best at offering to do stuff and help out with things like Bellerin, players like that are really good. So I really don't think it's that situation.
I find it interesting. It's kind of, you know, the club communicating a lot through Ornstein at the moment. You know, there's the Daily Mail article with the £45 million summer spend that comes out. You know, no doubt that Ornstein is booked to go on to Arsblog anyway, but all of a sudden, no, it's closer to 70, 100 million comes out. You know, it's got that Barcelona-esque feel. I don't know if you guys remember when, I think it was Sandro Rosell, I think it was him, was trying to become chairman of Barcelona. I'm going to sign Beckham. You know what I mean? That was his big pitch. He wins the position and then he doesn't sign him. But, you know, we're a bit like, we're going down that road of the Barcelona thing of unsettling players or communicating via the press a lot more than we used to.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I just honestly think the whole, because a lot of people did react angrily towards the club. That, oh, is this all you're doing? Is this all you're saying about Ramsey kind of thing? And I think it was just a little bit rushed and they kind of got caught on their heels a little bit in preparing packages. But some of the stuff they've done today, and they did do stuff last night as well after the original club statement, I don't think there's as much in it as people bought into it. But yeah, good luck to Aaron, obviously. I'm sure he'll still feature from now to the end of the season. I've seen a few people saying he should be dropped now and not played anymore, which I think is just, it really doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, we've all basically known, everyone has known that he was going and that Juve was the club, and he's, every time he's been on the pitch, he's been a professional and done his job, and I think he's played pretty well when he's been after the season.
You know? It's not as if we've got that great a squad that we can afford to leave out quality players.
No.
You know?
Very strange attitude.
I think we've looked best when we've played Aubameyang, Lacazette and Ramsey, you know, attacking the space in behind. I think that's when we've been best all season, so I don't think we're suddenly going to start dropping him. As much as Emery, I mean, that was another thing that Ornstein was saying on Fires Live last night, that Emery doesn't really fancy him, which I can maybe slightly understand if that was the case at the start. But for me, when he's played behind Bobby and Lacazette, he's been one of our best players.
To be honest, you say, you know, look, obviously me and John do the radio show nearly every week, okay? And some of the shit we've put out in the park this year, so some of the football has been diabolical, okay? The wins have been great, and you've got to credit Unai for that, okay? But some of the football we've played and some of the games we've played have been painful to watch, right? So when you do see good performances and then you don't try to repeat that, you find it quite strange. Ramsey's going, that's fine. You know, he doesn't have to pick him. But we got some big games coming up. If you know, Champions League is so important, you know, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm hoping for a Rambo farewell cup final goal in the Europa League. That'll do. Oh,
I know we joke about his ego or whatever, or his, you know, things like that and stuff. But I think part of the luxury the club had this time, as opposed to the Sanchez one, was where they knew if they kept Ramsey, like, they could legitimately reject probably 10, 15 million pounds in January, because if you get the, you know, fourth place or you get Champions League, it's worth that. And you also know with Ramsey that he's going to give 100%. So
he's not going to put
with Sanchez. I never really felt that was a realistic option. I always thought, like, look, we've got to sell him now.
Yeah.
This could get messy. Whereas I think with Ramsey, we all agree that, you know, you could play him every game now to the end of the season and he will give us all.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's hope he's more John Charles than Ian Rush, eh, Jace?
Oh, God save John Charles.
Yeah, great player, great player. Well, I mean, I think that's kind of it for news. Should we do some questions? Do you think Danny's awake? Look at that. I say it and he magically appears in the box.
It's like magic. Ta-da!
That's quite impressive. We're going to do some listeners' questions. One thing I did want to bring up, actually, I should have done it at the start, and I apologise. Very poor form of me. As we should say our condolences to Gordon Banks' family as well, who sadly passed away today. Obviously, England legend, and Pelé said the greatest goalkeeper he ever played against, I think. Made that. Yeah. Obviously, won the World Cup in 66, but it's probably the most famous save, I think, in a World Cup. Is it 1970?
Save of the century, it's dubbed, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a great, I retweeted it earlier on, there was a great story that someone who used to work for Leicester Mercury interviewed Gordon Banks years ago and just mentioned to him, oh, look, my son's a goalkeeper. And he basically... Banks gave all this lovely, like, advice for his son. He finally retweeted it, but just, you know, giving all these tips. Oh, you should play table tennis. That'd be good for your hand-eye coordination. And don't be worried about making mistakes. And just sort of underlined from whatever you read on social media that he was a proper, proper top bloke, as well as obviously a fantastic goalkeeper, but a really, really, you know, absolute gent, which probably underlines, you know, why he's England's greatest ever goalkeeper.
Yeah,
you see the tributes and you see the warmth, you know, the genuine warmth in the tributes towards the man, and it's quite inspiring, you know, as to how highly he was regarded, not just in England but around the world.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy who just impressed people, who people who people thought the world of. And, you know, let alone his football career, as a human being, as a man, you know, he represented, look, I'm no English football fan, we all know that, but he represented his country with utter pride. And, you know, and he's you know, a great servant to English football. So credit to the man. It's it's sad that this, you know, these boys are going now.
Yeah, two League Cups, one with Leicester and one with Stoke. Their only ever trophy. That was when Stoke were likeable. The World Cup, obviously, and then a few British home championships, which some younger people will be going, what the fucking hell was that? that's when all the countries in the British Isles played against each other.
Those are the days.
Yeah. So yeah, just thoughts of him and his family, and go, if you haven't seen it, at least just go and check out the save from the 1970 World Cup, because that is quite unbelievable. And had he not been injured, England might have done a bit better in that tournament. I think he's ranked second in the world. I think it's only Lev Yashin who was ranked above him. So he's above Dino Zoff, which is some achievement. But yeah. Should we do some listener questions then?
Yeah. Do you want me to do those?
Yeah. Far away, Si.
Right. First one, we will go for... actually, we're doing both. We've got how many questions we got? You can both answer all the questions. We've got time. Right, I'll come to you first, John. This is from Noir Confidential. Some are worried about the fact that we might have an all-Spanish team at the top with Emery, Sanyeli already part of it, and if Caguiao and Monchi tip for head recruitment and technical director jobs respectively. Is it justified? And wouldn't it help us work effectively? So what do you think about that, John?
I don't think there's an issue if they're all the same nationality or all speak the same language. That's a good thing. They understand each other better, and you know, two people can speak English, but if one of you is not your native language, there might be some inferences that you're not going to quite understand. Maybe there is a slight clickiness in that if they bring in certain coaches, things like that, there might be a little bit of difficulty. But look, they're all professionals and they should all be able to work with each other fine. Sanya, he's been at Barca, you know, been around all different sort of people. Emery's coached Spain, France, now in England. So I don't see a problem with it. Caguiao apparently is like been at the club. I don't know how long he's been there, but he found Fabregas, didn't he? And a few other youngsters. So he's done really well there. So that's good. As for Monchi, if we get him, that's amazing. Mm. I'm not sure how much it's going to cost us, but I definitely take him.
That was the interesting thing from that Ornstein Ask blog, which if anyone hasn't listened to, go and listen to it. It's always good, those. Mm. Both two absolute legends. But the interesting Ornstein was saying about that technical director or head of recruitment, whatever sort of role it is, it needs to be an ex-Arsenal man or someone who knows the club, which is why Eddie was linked, or it needs to be someone who's linked to Emery or knows Emery, which is why Monchi is the other sort of candidate. But
yeah,
sounds like Edu doesn't want to leave Brazil because of his family, so Monchi could be the front runner. And Ornstein also said on that he was told by one person that the Monchi deal was done, but it wasn't a good enough source for him to, you know, report it for the BBC. So
I think the thing with Monchi is if they do manage to pull it off, he is more in the Sanye. He's a contacts man rather than a stats sort of research in the way that Sven is sort of was presented to us as well. So yeah, I don't have a big problem with it, as long as they, you know, anyone else who comes in who perhaps isn't Spanish, there's no sort of alienation of that person, then I don't think it'll cause an issue.
Jace, what about you? Are you happy with the Spanish Inquisition or
the proof will be on the pitch, won't it? You know, that'll be the proof in the pudding, is what the players they bring in and how that translates into performances on the pitch. You know, I've said on the radio show, I can see a scenario where I can see Unai going in the summer. I really do. It's a long shot and it's probably not going to happen, but you know, there are a lot of things happening behind the scenes. The power struggle kind of thing is over. Raul and Venkai, I can't remember his name, I do apologise. You know, they're set in stone there now. It's been interesting how quickly that much vaunted triumvirate of Ivan, Raul and Sven has disintegrated. And now with Raul having that power, he's forming his own little team. You know, that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. There's not much we can do about it. I agree regarding Monchi. That would be a real coup if they brought him in. But, you know, we're going to see next season and the season after how well it actually works. You know?
Yeah. I think we give it a go. And I think I'd be very excited if they got Monchi in. And I agree with what John is saying in terms of the way he operates. Because now we've seen Sagnoli operate and is the influence he has. You know, you can see how much Sven was a Gazidis appointment because of the whole stats DNA and the way that the Kroenkes and Gazidis seem to be working. You can understand Mislintat, but he'd done that for the way Sagnoli's done transfers in the past. He doesn't seem to fit that mold. So I think Monchi would make sense in that appointment. Whether they get it done will be difficult, though, I think.
It's that side of it. You know, the club's going through a lot of change. You know, and they're going to get things right. They're going to get things wrong. It's not going to be a perfect sort of ride, is it? You know, we're currently going through the roller coaster, and you just got to accept that there's nothing much we can do about it. But if they get it right, we're going to be happy.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we'll go to you first for this one, Jace. I think you might have a good input on it. How many games from lead judges, by the way? How many games do you guys reckon Ramsey will start till the end of the season, Jace?
God knows, the one and only lead judges. He's the top man. Half a dozen. I look at what's gone before, and I don't think he's going to change the way he's selecting the team, etc. You know, it's going to be interesting to see when the big games come around, the teams he goes with. You know, we saw at City a change from thing, but that's kind of a hiding to nothing on their form. But, you know, I could see half a dozen games around there.
John, what are you saying?
I reckon the Europa League games, most of them is going to start, would be my guess. It'll be... I don't know about Barté because we should be good enough, but we're so short of players that you might have to play. And I agree with Jace. I actually think the United game and I think the Spurs game, those are ones he's likely to start. And the rest, I can see Emery keeping him just for the Europa League, for the sort of the so-called lesser team for the rest of the season. So they're like 6-7. Mate, hopefully all the Europa League games you'll get all the way to the final.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him leave with a trophy anyway. This is from the Gooners podcast. I'm coming to you first, John. Out of you 20 at ABW, at least one of you can surely leave your cats long enough to visit the States for Arsenal summer tour. Who's it going to be, you lazy fucks?
Well, I mean, there is one American already there. Mm. So we can send Shredder, although it is the other side of the country to him. And I believe... OG maybe looking at coming down from Canada land, and perhaps Aussie Dom as well. So I'm not sure about the Englishman, how many of us get out there. Maybe Simon will get lucky and get sent on the Arsenal.
I don't think I will, sadly, this time, but I can recommend. I've got to go to Singapore last time, and it was absolutely fantastic from a work point of view, but from just witnessing the stuff that the fans did or got to do. It was brilliant. And I know Neil would echo the same. So if any fans are sort of umming and ahhing about going, I'd really, really recommend it just from Singapore and how much fun that seems. So
yeah. I know Cole likes going to America. Although he's been to New York he's been to a few times. So maybe maybe
he likes Cole to see how he likes to see what proper underground goes. I don't think I'm allowed in the States, so.
Probably wise.
Yeah.
Right. So this will go for you, this one, Jace. Peter Kennelly with a question. Now that Welsh people at Arsenal are at critical lows from next season, what steps are Jace taking to ensure Welsh quotas are met?
I'm buying a UV shirt. No comment. We haven't got that many players good enough.
You get Ampadu, couldn't you?
Crop of good youngsters. Oh, I'd love Ampadu at the Arsenal.
Yeah. He's a player, isn't he? That was just random aside. I mean, his dad was freaking working for us, and we didn't sign him. Jeez,
unbelievable! Christ. Unbelievable! His you watch it. We played Norway the other day.
Looks an absolute player, doesn't he?
Come on, Scott. His composure on the ball is phenomenal, but he got done by one of the Norwegian players. And I see a lot of Arsenal fans talking about shithousery, whatever it is. I don't know, but my God, he went in on this guy straight afterwards from the throw-in, and he did him. Knee in the back, full, smashed him. And I haven't seen that on the pitch for a number of years. He's got a bit about him, Ampadu. Of all the Welsh youngsters, there's him, Harry Wilson, David Brooks.
Brooks is a lovely player. I've seen him this season.
I'd take any of those. If you could get one of those, I'd be over the moon.
I know this is an Arsenal podcast, but he can't seem to get in the Chelsea team, John. And obviously, Sarri doesn't really like Hudson-Odoi. Is that just a Sarri thing where he doesn't like playing youngsters or something? Or
he's not against youngsters, but Sarri's slightly weird in that he's one of the few managers who he hates the transfer market. He wants nothing to do with it. He thinks it's a complete mess. I can't remember what it is he called it, but they were talking about it on Galazzo the other day. But he had some very disparaging phrase for it. And he basically just says, "These are the players you've given me. Cool, I'll use them." And he kind of basically has sort of 14, 15 players, and that's all he'll ever use. It's partly why he wanted Jorginho at Chelsea and why he wanted to bring Higuain in, because he knew he can get something out of them. Obviously, it's not going so well for him, though, at the moment. But yeah, he's not...
Alpadu seems like a no-brainer for them to get him in there, just a bit.
Yeah, he's not against youngsters, because, you know, there's players like Zielinski and a few others at Napoli who he used quite a bit. So, yeah. I don't know. Chelsea's just a weird club. I'd advise all youngsters to get out there as soon as possible.
The problem he got is the same thing happened in Mourinho. The same similar thing happened to Conte. You know, you look at Conte's first season, okay? They were the best team in the league by a mile. And then for what happened the second season, you know, I think there's a bit too much player power there. But how do you avoid that?
John, would you rather have Emery or Sarri?
Oh, I'd have Sarri all day long, but people will laugh at me now because they just got beat 6-0.
It's because they'll watch him and they'll go... Carragher comment caused a lot of outrage on Twitter, that.
Yeah. I just like the way Sarri plays football. When people go, but look, he can't defend and he's only got one plan and stuff. And it's like, well, if the players do exactly what he said... Yeah, if their players do exactly what he said, then it's fine, it works. If people go back and watch Napoli, the football they were playing under Sarri for the last three seasons... It's honestly the best football I've seen since Pep's Barcelona.
Didn't watch them on purpose because you were wanking over it so much.
Pep said they were the best team in Europe. So
yeah,
but good luck taking on that Chelsea dressing room.
Yeah.
Anyway, JJ Gunner, will come to you first, John. Fucking hell, how long we got for this? Is Ramsey a legend?
Oh, this is easy. Right. So some people have said, he's not a legend. He can't be considered one. It's not like he's Omri or any of his other players. Now, I agree. Yeah, he's not as good a player as Omri, and he's not a Bobby Pires or anyone like that. There's a geezer called Alan Sunderland, who some Arsenal fans might know. I didn't get to see him play, but he did score an FA Cup winning goal against Man United in 1979. And he is an Arsenal legend. Well, Aaron Ramsey has scored two. So, I don't know. What, does it not count anymore? Look, I agree the FA Cup is not the big trophy you want to win anymore. It's not as glamorous as it used to be. But I celebrated those trophies just as hard as I celebrated league titles and the old Cup Winners' Cup when we won that as well. So for me, he will be 10 years at the club, came back from a horrendous injury, always given his all, scored some ridiculous goals. Was it Besiktas or Galatasaray, that goal? I don't know how.
Galatasaray. Yeah.
Was that volley?
I have no idea. We're on his left foot as well. How he did
like
it.
Attraction.
Chesney and Sonogo's faces. when you've got what was his name? What's his name, little Spaniard?
Santi
cleaning his boots or whatever. You know, it's just, that was one of the goals, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he scored some ridiculous goals. He's won us two FA Cups. That, I said at the time, the FA Cup win against Chelsea was probably my not my favorite, but it'd been my favorite for it's up there in the top three in terms of trophies won under Wenger, just because it was so unexpected, and the performance from the team and everything from the day. And yes, it's a team sport and everything else, but yeah, for me, he'll be a legend. Not like certain other players who have left with legend status, who left the club in slightly slimy, snaky ways, shall we say?
Who ran like rats
to the F1.
Yeah.
I think it was Tim Hardwick who tweeted a good thing. It's subjective whether you think someone's a legend or not. But he said he might not be a legend, but he's a scorer of legendary goals, which I think is definitely right. I mean, because the importance of the goals, and as you say, John, he scored some absolute beautiful goals.
It's that kind of thing, you know. It's up to individuals how they see it.
Exactly.
You know? But that's your highest scoring central midfielder in Arsenal history. That's 330 plus appearances in the bank. You know, that's you know, it's up to people how they see it, isn't it? You know, but it's.
I think he'll be considered it in sort of 10 years' time from now.
And considering he came back from that injury as well.
Yeah,
it's that side of it, not just the injury, but when he was being booed by the whole of the Emirates, when his form was scratchy. Do you know what I mean?
And asked him just to help him out, started playing him at right back in games and stuff.
Yeah.
And he turned down Man United time for Arsenal. So
yeah. And when he wasn't scoring enough goals and he was playing on the right hand side of midfield when we played Theo up top, he was our joint top tackler of a season.
Mm. No, you can't tackle. Chris said he can't tackle.
Fucking hell. hey, should we bring up Yaya Sanogo?
Oh, I know. He scored, didn't he? He scored. He caused chaos.
Wait, was in my club.
Do you think he'll be good for Juve, John?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like they seriously are missing a player from midfield who can break into the box. At the moment, their version of that is Sami Khedira, who did actually score at the weekend, but like his legs aren't in it. He just hasn't got the legs anymore. And a lot of the game, if you speak to Lana and any other Juve fans on Twitter, most of them hate Khedira. They hate Emre Can. They don't understand what Juve have been doing in terms of midfielders and their purchases at the moment. Yes, Juve needed like a holding midfielder, and I think Ndombele from Lyon looks like the likely target, but Ramsey's ability to break into the box, they'll love that at Juve. And it's just his commitment and his work rate.
It's that ability to find space, isn't it?
Yeah. And he's going to get to play off Ronaldo, play with Dybala, you know, really, really intelligent players. And you can be really talented and skillful and everything and have all the ability in the world at Juve, or you can be, and I don't want to put the guy down, but Mario Mandzukic, who is a very talented, skillful player, but when you watch him for the majority of the game, he's just battling with people, he's feisty, he's, you know, winning knockdowns, that kind of thing. Work rate and effort and commitment for the shirt is almost valued more there. And that, obviously, that's one of the things you always get with Ramsey. So, yeah, I think he'll be a hit there.
I think Allegri will love him as well. I think he'll love working with him.
I think it might be Zidane who will be working with him, to be honest.
Oh,
I think
he better, jeez.
Yeah, so he might even have one of the best.
To be fair, Zidane and Bale got on great, didn't they? So that'd be
yeah.
right, final question. Noir Confidential. Jace, you can have this one first. Do you think it's plausible that in order to offload Ozil, the club will offer to cover part of his wages, or will they do everything to avoid such a move, including selling him for a heavily reduced fee?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, if you're subsidising wages, it's the road to hell, isn't it? You know, the point with Ozil at the moment is so it looks like it's either going to be him or Unai going, right? And that'll be a cronk decision more than anything, I'd suppose, because of the value of the asset. I know we've his initial fee's been amortised and we've paid for it and it's no longer there. You know, he's our star man. He's the one with the name on the back and on everything. I think, you know, I can't see many takers and anything above 20 million out there. So you're either going to take the reduced fee or you're going to end up subsidising wages. And that's one thing we don't want to be in. We don't want to be in a position where we have that outgoing every month. So if you are going to get rid of him, it's best to sort of just take the hit.
Yeah, I agree with that. What about you, John? What do you think?
I mean, I wouldn't want to be in a position where you're subsidising his wages. If it's basically you're letting him go for almost nothing, then sometimes you just have to kind of swallow that. There are some clubs interested. Inter are definitely interested. Milan, there was talk as well. So there's a few clubs in Serie A. Juventus are not one of the clubs, despite what some people said about him hooking up again with Ronaldo. They wouldn't want to pay those wages. But yeah, Jace almost burst into song when he said there's a star man, which made me look at the... It's hilarious, Jace, because I just looked at the lyrics. He'd like to come and meet us, but you think he'd blow our minds. He's not doing it on the pitch, is he? He's getting a little digging. Nice defending Maitland-Niles in a Iwobi, and then I had to put the boot in on Ozil.
Is that his fault or the manager's, though?
Yeah, that is a good point. Now, look, the situation is ridiculous. You can't have a guy on that much money and not be playing him, you know, at least once a week, if not week in, week out.
That's an indication of Emery's power, though, that he can bin off his, you know, the record wage holder. I mean, that is...
In all fairness, he had to have that power coming in, didn't he? You know, you're taking over from AW, who's been 20-odd years. And it's like we've said in the radio show, you know, if he doesn't want to play Ramsey, don't play him. Fine. It's your job relies on your decisions here. When you see the quality of some of our football, you question it. But, you know, the Ozil situation is one of those dominoes. If it falls the wrong way, it could cost him his job.
Mm.
Yeah, I just think I agree, though, with the question that the club will do everything they can to try and move him on and sort of force him out.
You got to do something. It's ridiculous. Yeah. There's one more question I didn't realise was being an idiot. Nicky Wilson, we'll go John first and Jace. How do Arsenal force players to extend their contracts or be sold to a non-rival in the future?
Well, one thing is that if you've got 2 years left on a contract, then a club should be looking at basically making a decision on whether they're going to offer a new contract or not. I don't think you let it get to 18 months or lower. That's something the club haven't done in the past. And then you just have to make it clear to the player, you know, if you do want to sell them or move them on, say, look, you do not have a future here. If you stay, you're not going to be used. You will not be played. And we will not sell you to a rival club unless there is, you know, some exception of, you know, a ridiculous fee. And you just say to the player, look, if the club really want you that much, then they'll pay what we're asking. Or you'll take less wages there so they can pay us more money. And you just have to put your foot down and be a bit more firm. I think we've been too nice, essentially, in the past. Plenty of other clubs do it and manage contracts perfectly well. I hate to say it, but the scumbags up the road do very, very well on their contracts and signing players and stuff like that. So, we could maybe take a lesson from them. I know people won't like me saying that, but it's true.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's... I think part of it is... I think you will see more players doing what Ramsey's done, certainly when they see the reported money he's got, even if it is $250,000 a week, still loads of money, that players will... you know, run down their contracts and get that big move. And it's also the balance of power. We talk a lot about player power in football, but it's shifted so much to the player, I think. I mean, Five Live the other night, Ian Wright and Chris Sutton were talking about when they were players, it was that thing where you had 2 years left on your deal and the club would be like, right, we'll give you a new deal or we're going to sell you.
Yeah.
And, you know, a player would, and back then the player might have been like, oh, I'm going to take this deal because, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I need the money. Whereas the players are on so much money now. You know, I mean, Ramsey already was earning good money at Arsenal, where they can just be like, no, I'm just going to gamble. I'm just going to go and sit and wait. You know, I can, if worse comes, say if I get an injury, you know, obviously it's going to be, it's going to damage my move, damage my prospects getting a deal. But they're on so much money already that they've got so much power of being in that position.
I just think you have to make it clear that you will not be playing football.
Yeah.
And you literally just have to, it's not even benching him, just saying you're not even in the squad anymore.
I think the issue with the Ramsey one is obviously, as we've seen,
yeah,
he's a good player, and it's like it's
well,
like,
we're running out of them, so I don't think we're gonna have
exactly. We unfortunately we're not in that position where we can, you know, have an asset sitting there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think big power clubs like your Cities, your PSGs, you know, your Chelseas, your Man United, they've probably got the cash to be to a player like, right, you're going to sit and rot.
If your club is winning things as well, you're in a much better negotiating position. Arsenal's a club and are in a very weak negotiating position for any player at the moment because we're not challenging for anything.
Well, it happened with the Ozil deal where, his agent played that superbly, whereby Sanchez had gone. So they're just trying to sort out Ozil's contract. They're not trying to sort out Ozil and Sanchez. And he basically played it. So Sanchez's gone. I'm here for 4 months left. And it's just like, oh, the club are back to the corner. Like, shit, we've got to keep him just almost for PR sense. We can't lose Ozil and Sanchez in the space of 2 months. And his agent just waited. Then 4 months ago. And they could wait that long because, you know, even if there wasn't this big money offer abroad, they're earning so much money already anyway. And the bizarre thing is you look at like Ozil and he obviously ended up on 350 grand a week. But you think Arsenal were trying to do that deal for, what, 18 months? Almost 2 years. So he's lost out on the loss of earnings he's had. Even if he wasn't going to get 350, let's say he was going to get 200 and he was on 100 grand. He's wasted 2 years where he could have been doubling his money. But they're just in such a strong position that they can do that.
But you just hope the new guys that have come in, like the Sky contracts guy.
Yeah, Ornstein speaks very highly of Farming.
Yeah, but this is the thing, boys. I think, you know, you're trying to close the barn door when the horse is bolted, okay? The bottom line is the most powerful people in football nowadays are the agents. You look at the fees that clubs like City and United pay to agents alone. They're in the £30-50 million a summer range, okay? So the agents will decide where the players are going. Half the time, you look at John, you've mentioned in Italy that Raiola and Mendes, they decide where young players are going to play next season. It's not the clubs who do that. Combined with that, okay, with the TV money ramping up, okay, players want a slice of the pie. And if you're not winning titles or you're not a Man City or you're not a United, if you haven't got a massive backer, okay, who's going to prepare to pay those wages, or you're not a behemoth of a club like Man United or Real Madrid, right? If you're a player like us, you can't stop them going to rivals because the rivals will always want your best players. It's as simple as that. There's nothing you can do about it. Whose farm is not going to change anything. Raul's not going to change anything. If you've got a player who's that good and the big boys come in, you're selling him. It's as simple as that. It all then depends on the fee that you negotiate and how much you're prepared to pay the agent. The days of what can we do about it are gone. Football's passed us by. A club like the Arsenal has been left behind on this. Tottenham have been left behind on it. It doesn't matter. They still do good business, but forget about doing anything about it. It's dreamland.
Probably why they're trying to hire someone like Monchi, and Sagnoli, who are both, you know, well in with agents. And
if you can't beat the system, you've got to play it.
Yeah, so true.
You know, simple as that.
Right, Fives Forum, John.
Right, it's time for a bit of Park Five. Fives Forum this week. Question was, the Europa League is back. If we make the final, who do you want and why? Jason Simon, you can think about this whilst I read through. So the Gooners podcast have answered, if we make the final, I'd like to play Rapid Wien because that's my wife's nickname for my penis. Sometimes, Jesus. I read the answers before I read them out. And this time I obviously haven't. So,
wow.
Oh. In all fairness, okay, if you've seen Mike's wife, he's punching.
In all fairness, that could be an ironic nickname.
So. Oh, dear. That is true, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, Rapid. I'm not sure. That's not a compliment. JJ Gunner says, I wish Atletico was still in it so we could get revenge. I still have nightmares of when Koscielny kicked the ball into his own face to assist Griezmann. but as they aren't, I'll go for the Chavs so we could put the final nail in the coffin of Sarri. Oh, savage. Noir Confidential says, I would like us to play against Villarreal in the final. Two reasons. Both relate to Santi Cazorla. I love the guy and wish him well. He deserves to reach the European final. And I want our team to play on the same pitch as him at least one more time. It's a nice sentimental one. Jace, do you know who you want to play? Do you even know who's in the competition?
Funny enough, I just had a quick look.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I did have a quick look. I don't know. Well, look, Inter Milan would be nice to beat in the final because that would make you feel bad for your Inter fanboy side. So, you know, a little bit of pain for you. Mm-hmm. I fucking hate Lazio. I detest those bastards. So I wouldn't mind playing Lazio and stamping them 4-0 mm-hmm. in the final. An Aaron Ramsey hat trick.
Seems good.
Fanboy Simon.
I mean, if the presumption is we're going to win the final, who we play. So
yeah,
beating Chelsea would be quite nice. I was also looking at maybe like Galatasaray would be quite nice, considering the 99-2000 when we lost the final to them. So that might be quite nice, a little bit of revenge. Other than that, maybe Celtic and beating Brendan Rodgers would be quite nice.
Oh,
just because I can imagine him in the build-up to it. He would love all the attention because he'd get a lot from the British media. Mm. And I think beating him would be quite sweet.
Simon, I've had enough of watching dog shit football this season.
other than that, there's not many other teams in there. What about you, John?
It's weird as well because it's in Baku, so Celtic Arsenal
final win. Mickey's not going to play, is he either?
Yeah, if we get there, although they did say they're giving special discompensation to.
Yeah. I don't think he would go. No.
We could have Leverkusen.
We could have Leverkusen. I would honestly. I mean, it would be cool if it was Inter because then I'll win either way. just being greedy. No, Napoli would be good. Just because I'd like to see Ancelotti upset and annoyed and a big pile of disappointment because I think he's a little bit overhyped since he's, I don't know. I think he's lost
great eyebrows, though.
He has got great eyebrows, though. That is true. Lazio would be good, though. They're playing some lovely football. So, I'd take any of the Italian teams. Galatasaray, I'd fear for our fans going out there.
Yeah, that would be tasty.
I mean, I guess Celtic would be funny. But, I think I'd rather one of the Italian
teams. Then I couldn't face if we lost to Celtic and Brendan.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, that would be far too much. But
I think...
Yeah. So, that was it. We've got all our shout-outs to do now. So, Jake, Si, get your shout-outs ready. I will do the podcast, Gentleman's Nods. Thank you, as always, for your donations this week from Unique79, Michael Hanneman and Dom Lloyd. My shout outs. First one is to any ladies listening. The DMs are open, so please slide in. But no, my shout outs to Arian Hadari and also to Jimmy R as well. So Jimmy R is at DCU_Guna and Arian is at AH99 with a load of underscores. Always tweeting me about all different football things and always having a good chat. Arian in particular, who apparently said that I predicted Arsenal going undefeated in 2004 on Twitter as well, which was really impressive because Twitter wasn't even invented until 2006. But he did put the post up of me tweeting it. So there you go. There's mine. Jason, you got? Jason is so stunned. He's put himself on mute.
I read that out, mate, on the radio show.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh,
there you go. Yeah. Fucking way ahead of you, fella. Sorry. last guy who followed me is Morgan Fluin, FLUIN, at Fluin Morgan. That's at FLUIN Morgan. A Brisbane boy, proud dad, Guna, St. George Illawarra, Dragons. That's a rugby league team. Deportivo La Coruña, London Mets baseball. There we go. Hello, Morgan.
Simon, I assume yours is just like Henry Winter and Ollie Holt and everyone else.
No. Arnie, thanks for the follow, Arnie. Oh, Arnie.
Now mine's just recommend. If you don't follow him already, David Ornstein on Twitter.
he follows me, don't you know?
No, mine is I was lucky enough to do which you guys already tweeted, preached a piece last week with Arsenal in the Community, which is Arsenal's foundation and charity side. Basically, they've been in Islington, Camden, Westminster. They've been working there for 30 years with kids from local estates, putting on football sessions in parks, helping them find work. And I got to do a piece on it last week. So just a shout out to all the work they do. I don't know if anyone listened to the podcast, but when we moan about our club and players playing badly, we forget about some of the stuff they do completely away from the football pitch and the difference that they actually make in the community every day and every week. So just a shout out to them for all the work they do.
Well, there you go, listeners. A bit of class to round it out there.
The Junior Gunners is an excellent organisation as well, isn't it? You know, they do a lot with that. I know Gav of She Wall always mentions them. As soon as his children were born, they signed up the Junior Gunners. So there's a lot the club do that we don't give them credit for, in all fairness.
Oi, stop trying to steal Simon's thunder. Just because he outclassed both of us, it's fine.
I don't believe he always outclasses us. Don't try to punch the
chair. But also, recommend follow at BBC Sport _David. Great follow.
just for the replies you get to his tweets, it's worth it.
I love you, Si. You're my favourite.
Right, until this, to stop this descending into chaos, we have been a Bergkamp Wonderland. So it's just time for me to say thank you to Jason for coming on. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. Oh, forgot to say Valentine's Day tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Thursday.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why John mentioned the DMs.
Yeah. Also, if you're a single man and you can't get a Valentine's, apparently Pornhub's giving away free premium on Valentine's Day. So here you go. For your boots.
Imagine that a Thursday night, Europa League and Pornhub.
Also, thank you to Simon.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thank you for bringing the class level up a little bit. Thank you for Danny silently in the background. We will be back, listeners, obviously, for you with the Bartey game and back next week as well. And also, we are doing the draw for the Santi Cazorla shirt giveaway. So if you haven't got involved yet, go check out our pin tweet, go check out our Facebook, give you all the details how you can win a signed Santi Cazorla shirt, because it is running out this weekend and it's going to be drawn and we'll see who wins it. But yeah, that's it. So that's all from us from Bergkamp Wonderland. Jason normally says turn this shit off, but I guess Danny just stops recording, doesn't he, Jason? I don't know how you end it.
We go to the second half then, don't we?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I know.
Good night, listeners.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Nanu, nanu, cheeky fuckers.
Damn, dog. No.